Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
And the song that she was singing was Ride On. And the reason why we picked that song, Ride On, because horses, I love horses. Also, it's my background of horses, and when my granddad passed away, that was his funeral song.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome to episode 136 of the Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan, Johnny Ward. Remember, here every Friday with race previews, analysis, tip stories, interviews, a bit of crack as well. Reminder, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts every week. How are you doing, Johnny?
Good, JD. Thanks.
So, the Derby weekend at Epsom, I was delighted for Monaster Evans, Ronan Whelan, 33 years of age, to have the biggest day of his racing life on Christmas Day, the Derby.
Yeah, I think as Brian O'Connor wrote about it so well in the Irish Times on Sunday, it was like as if on Christmas Day, Santa Claus became like not the story because of what happened in relation to Benvenuto Cellini. But the story really for me, I felt there was far too much coverage about the favourite being declared non-runner, because under the BHA's rules, like they basically can do what they did. And I kind of think at times we need to get on with life. There are more important things than like berating the BHA over declaring a horse a non-runner in the Derby when they actually had reason to. And Christmas Day, we have a mutual friend who did the tri-cast in the race. Now, he was hit with a fairly harsh rule 4 in his tri-cast, but some people did fancy Christmas Day on the basis of his prep run when he's maybe on the wrong side of the track. But, you know, I've known Ronan reasonably well for years. He doesn't feel like he's aged very much at all. He certainly doesn't look his age. And he's a great lad. He's another, you know, Derby winner that won't make much of a stallion, probably. It was a forgettable enough race, I thought. But it was a great day for Ronan Whelan. It just shows, JD, if you get opportunities with Ballydoyle, all of a sudden you're on a 7-1 shot in the Derby.
He's backed as well. We noted very well that backed in the full pod. And we noted that he was around 20-1 on the Friday. And there's money coming from him. 12th, also record extending win for Aidan O'Brien. So if Benvenuto Cellini doesn't do it, he's got another inmate that can.
Yeah, and we've seen plenty of O'Brien horses who weren't the stable pick. Like Pierre Bernard was probably the most fancied of them. But like he throws a lot of horses at the Derby. He had 4 runners. They're generally middle distance bred horses. A lot of them are kind of bred for the Derby. There have been basically a paucity of British runners in recent years of major note. Aidan and Coolmore still love the race, and it won't go down as a particularly memorable Derby. I found it quite a frustrating 2 days because, like, I'm giving Calandigan as my tip here. Like, Calandigan was 1,000,000-1 on that ground. But, like, you're giving tips. Benvenuto Cellini was not going to go on that ground, even though I said beforehand, if it's good to soft, he'll be fine. It was the sort of ground that was really, really fine out horse.
Yes.
And it's a tricky thing for punters. In the days of climate change and that, where you get these extreme, but also can be quite localised events of rain, that it is very, very hard to forecast it. But I felt the Coronation Cup was a bit of a farce, to be honest. Like, you know, Calandigan was, he might as well have, he wouldn't have turned up if they'd known the ground.
Put a line through it, really.
Put a line through it.
But Oisin Murphy was enterprising to go down the side. He did a basically roller.
I actually feel one of the things that came out of Epsom and in general is how well Oisin Murphy is riding. He's a guy I've never met, and it's easy for me to criticise Oisin at times because of, you know, the difficulties he's had off the track and the mistakes he's made. He's an unbelievably good rider. Like, he might be the best rider around. He really might be. He was so good, the wins he had at Epsom. That was an enterprising ride. He's just doing so much right at the moment, and I just hope things stay good for him off the track.
But isn't the future guy, Dylan Brown-McMonagall, this guy, I've met him, he is a star. He's only 23. Mm. He's Irish champion flat jockey, and his ride on Thundery Non, I mean, the quote here, there was never really a moment of doubt in the Oaks.
Yeah, well, I will say, maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, but I would say if you had 100 jockeys in that horse, maybe 100 of them would have won. She was that good. But he rode with a confidence that belies the fact that, like, I think he'd only his first Derby ride. Maybe last year he was on a horse that had a bit of a chance. She was a horse that went in, you know, with a good, the right profile for the race. Had actually been beaten in a maiden 2 runs back, which is extraordinary. But Joseph Ryan has brought her along very well, and it was extraordinary to see how well he was travelling around about 4.5 out. This is the stuff, if you dreamt of riding a race, that's how it would be.
Or having money on.
Or having the money on. She could have been backed.
She drifted, you have to find.
Yeah, I did tip her in the race, but I have to say now, I didn't have a bet in the race. I wasn't really sure. I wasn't mad in the favour, but I wasn't sure would she be good enough. But boy, was she good enough, and she could be a superstar. It'd be lovely to see her in the Champion Stakes in Leopardstown.
Rule H6 about Benvenuto Cellini, this is the UK rule, is in a race started from starting stalls, a horse is denied a fair start and his chances are materially affected, including but not limited to where a horse is prevented from starting on equal terms due to faulty action of the starting stalls, can be declared a non-runner. But I suppose what people are angry about is what type of precedent does it set when it comes to the top races? There has been precedence of this before happening where the horses have been ruled non-runners if there's an issue in the stalls. But isn't the whole point of racing, Johnny, that luck does play a part? And if you're going in there and having a bet, you've got to accept sometimes that you're not going to get the rub of the green. It's not just accepted practice in racing. And people will be frustrated if they back Christmas Day and some bookmakers don't apply the rule four to that.
Yeah, no, bookmakers were absolutely right to apply rule four. There's, I mean, if 30% of the bets are on the Derby favourite, you have to give all that money back, unjustifiably, really, and then you don't pay a rule four on the gambled on winner. Like, that's not fair. Like, and in fairness to bookmakers, they absolutely, some of them didn't, but I wouldn't be holding against any bookmaker who
But is this VAR now for horse racing? Yeah, are we going to be relitigating every race? Oh, yeah. Well, that happened to Benvenuto Cellini, happened to my horse now.
Well, this is the thing, JD, like in restarts in the 5:03 yesterday at Yarmouth, it's a similar enough incident, and Ristart completely gives up his chance before the race. Ex-Irish horse, actually, but it's a real low-key event, and he's declared a runner. But like the one thing about this is, if you watch it, it happens really fast. Ryan Moore, at the last second, literally, isn't happy that for the stalls to open. And the BHA made a decision that because it happened before the stalls were opened, and basically Ryan Moore wasn't happy, and I think when they said everyone happy, Ryan Moore wasn't happy. They made a decision that it was fair for him that he had his leg up kind of on the side, and that they made the right call. I think it was the wrong call, but I think there's been an overreaction on it. I feel like, and you know, the BHA even alluding to personal abuse of officials and all that, really distressing stuff. It, you know, I think it was a somewhat tone deaf move in terms of the betting game, because like I tipped him up in the race. It was my best result on Saturday in that he was declared a non-runner. I didn't have a good Saturday, but if I backed him, I obviously absolutely was not expecting my money.
When he ran his race, he wasn't
on the ground anyway.
If he'd had a fair break, he wasn't going to win the race anyway.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree. Like I feel they made the wrong call, but they looked into it and they decided that because it happened at the time it did, and it was a real split second thing, that horse wasn't able to gather himself right. Now, I do feel part of racing is behaving yourself, and part of being a good sportsman is not getting a red card and not having the red mist and not doing stupid things and keeping your cool. Like Benvenuto Cellini, ultimately, he sort of misbehaved in the stalls, and he probably should have been punished for that. But the rules, I mean, in the overall scheme of things, there are far bigger problems in the world than getting two. Like, honestly, I think it's just been overplayed here. The horse himself hardly had a race, and I know it was disappointing what happened, but sometimes the BHA just gets too much criticism. And this for me, it wasn't that big of a deal.
Welcome back to Yeah, That's a Pepper Thing. First up, we've got Harrison wrapping his Dr. Pepper in a tiny quilt so it feels at home. Oh, how tender. That's a Pepper Thing. And over to Becca, who's whispering affirmations to her can.
You're sweet. You're unique. You're the best thing I ever poured over ice.
She swears it makes it taste better. It's not a science thing, but it's a Pepper Thing. Why do they all do it? All for that sweet, delicious, truly one-of-a-kind taste of Dr. Pepper. It's a Pepper Thing.
Okay, that's last weekend's Epsom recap. Declan Queedy, who's been in the news for lots of different reasons this year. Remember the spat in De Boyneville at Cheltenham, which was resolved ultimately. He did an interview with David Walsh in the Sunday Times. Possibly the most interesting racing piece I've read in a while now, I'd have to say. A lot of racing pieces are pretty standard, even in the industry paper. My favourite racing post pieces are the kind of the legend pieces, or like if we're talking to Mark Prescott about a gamble, or, you know, 30, 40 years ago, Don Run in 86 and the story of Don Run. Those feature pieces fascinate me. But this was interesting. Took $500,000, the Waterford trainer, out of the ring following doubles on Rocky's Diamond and Diamond Noir in 2024. And talks about being without any apology for it being a gambling yard. And sometimes it works, and he's gone to the races himself and put money down and it hasn't worked out. And what did you feel when you read the piece? What stood out to you?
Yeah, well, I feel the point you're making there about, you know, racing pieces being a bit the same and all of that. This was written in the Sunday Times by David Walsh, so obviously you've a high caliber of journalist here, but there's a real poverty of good racing content now. A real poverty. Like the Sunday papers have, you know,
Almost gone.
Almost gone. Like there's
Don McLean does his bit, but
we'll say if
Derek O'Hur, that's about it.
When Brian O'Connor has gone from the Irish Times, will there be any journalists left in Ireland? I genuinely don't know that. And Brian is like almost like the last. He's like the last light before it's turned off. And Brian writes some proper thought provoking pieces, including about Benvenuto Cellini on Monday. But this piece was very, very good. It was just so readable, and it makes me appreciate the Sunday paper, that you get the paper, you have the physical paper, you read something that you really like. It just embellishes your day. The problem with a piece like this, I suppose, is that you know, Declan Queeley's horses had to improve massively on their previous form. But he's very honest in the piece, very, very honest. And I had to laugh as well. That stuff about where he sends the kid in and tells him to go betting on dogs. Like, I swear to God, that is exactly what I do when I want to back a horse in the bookies. I'd go in, I'd even have a pint or two. I'd hope that they'd be able to smell the booze off me at the counter. I'd back dogs, like hope that you'd kind of half break even. It's almost like laundering money, because it's like you want to get some back, but you mightn't. But you're like, and then when you actually do the bet that you want, they just think at this stage, this lad's on, you know, he's on tick here. Like he's coming out of the bar for the last hour. But that's exactly what I would have done. And it was funny that Declan said that I know Ladbrokes had a big Stewards Inquiry over this, because like ultimately those bets shouldn't have been laid. It was a huge liability. The guys, you know, even the way he speaks about the guy in Colin White, who's one of the gentlemen in the bookmaker ring, he speaks about the guy who got the bet on at the track. He's well known for betting like pretty heavy, so they will lay him. But this is like 30 grand on one horse in a run. I was in Ballinrobe that night, I remember. Some guy came up to me with a docket. I think it was between the first one winning and the second. And he showed me the docket, and even he was on at a big price. And it was the related double. But like a bookmaker laid 30 grand, give or take, liability on one horse in a maiden hurdle trained by a very shrewd operator. So it's a great piece, really good piece.
But he spotted that horses, the market will not take maiden hurdlers seriously because we're just going to get handicapped.
Yeah.
He spotted something in the system and he beat them at their own game. That's what was interesting about it for me.
So I wouldn't agree with him now on what he said in relation to algorithms and all of that. Because if you, it's nothing to do with algorithms, really. It's basically odds compiling is almost dead, and William Hill is by far one of the better ones left. Odds compiling is almost dead. They just let horses drift, but like if you run in two maiden hurdles, it is like expected that your third run is going to be a quiet run. And absolutely, if you're an odds compiler and you price that horse up at 50, 100 to 1, I'm not going to give out to you. Like it's justified. Turns out one of the horses would go on to be rated 150. But like the Barney Curley anecdote about the dog, like, which again shows how hooky the game was back then or whatever, and it goes to show that, you know, betting on dogs in whenever Barney was a kid, like, you know, there was a lot of skullduggery going on. But that was a great anecdote. Didn't know that story at all. Barney decided to back the dog himself, didn't give him what his dad had given him to stop him winning, and he never told him basically what happened, and he won like 14 sterling or whatever at the time. But that was a great story. And like Tom Queeley, obviously funny as well. Chris Tafaro, that horse, I remember him well. I used to back him, and that four timer, I'd forgotten that Declan was so central to it. He rode one who won. Rode one who was beaten when Barney Curley pulled off the big heist. It was amazing stuff. And like other Charles Burns has tried it, other big players have tried it. That's related bets where, like, if you have four horses fancied, other people have tried to do them with different trainers on the same day. Like, so Barney spawned these great people thinking of how am I going to beat the bookies. It's a great piece.
Interesting thing that was, I don't know, it wasn't in the piece, but this was a key thing about Barney Curley's education in life and how things can go your way and how things can not go your way, that his dad had a certainty, a dog that ran and he broke his neck in the first bend.
Yeah.
And that's not in the piece, but just to show us how, like, these horses can be brought down that technically need totally. The money on. And that's where there's an acceptance, and I find it acceptable that you can have a go sometimes and try to see a gap in the system. What I can't accept is the laying of horses, because I think that's completely, you know, irresponsible and illegal and should be punished and
more
be
or less gone now, in fairness.
Warned off. But the other thing is, bookmakers taken, as Declan said in the piece, taken problem gamblers' money relentlessly, closing winning accounts, having this thing which, and we love horse racing and we think the bookmaker is a really important part of that and a fair part of that, and we are sponsored by a bookmaker. But this thing with online slots that are being advertised now completely relentlessly at after 9 o'clock in the evening, and they're parasitic and there's so much sophistication in their design that they're there to get punters in and make them lose.
I've kind of two views on the whole thing in that I still resent bookmakers just not laying punters at least a bit. You can't lay inside information to lose 100 grand on a horse. Like, I wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that. Why would a bookmaker do that when racing, isn't making them anywhere near the money it did? But I feel that bookmakers should lay everyone to lose a small bit. Now, the one thing about, like, I remember reading Barney Curley's autobiography, and it was actually William Hill he was giving out about in it, that William Hill hadn't the temerity to lay him a bet. Like, Barney Curley, like, the way he trained his horses, like, Barney had a lot of cheek now in calling out bookmakers who wouldn't lay his bets. When a horse would go from absolutely tailed off in five runs to suddenly improving 50 pounds. Like, so, like, the bookmakers, I wouldn't be laying Barney Curley money, and Galway stopped laying him when Jamie Spencer rode a horse about 20 odd years ago. So I think you have to look at it both ways, but I agree that, and I will again defend bookmakers. I think that those days of laying the problem gamblers, I think that's pretty much gone now. They've learned their lesson, they've been punished for it, and I think that it's a much cleaner game now. But it was a great piece, and Declan's given me a couple of horses if I asked him at the races, and he's very, very shrewd, and he's obviously then he got that spat with Nico de Boinville, so it has been I liked it. Somebody texted me and he said, why did he do that article? Why did he agree to do it? And I replied, well, I'd say he was asked to do it, and he said yes, and that was it.
Okay. We have previews for this weekend. York, good to firm, good in places on Saturday. 3 o'clock, race to the Ebor Grand Cup Stakes, 1 mile, 6 furlongs. Al Karim won the race easily last year, but doesn't enter this edition in the same form.
Yeah, and there could be a bit of a pace angle in the race, JD. I think he's going to be maybe 2-1 favourite or something like that. Even though it's a 6-horse race, there is a bit of pace pressure for Al Karim. And I don't know. I looked at Epic Poets run the last day, Danny Tudhope, in a 7-horse race in Sandown. It's hard to believe how much trouble it was actually unbelievable how much trouble Danny Tudhope found on that occasion. And I don't know, Danny Tudhope knows Epic Poet well, and maybe he needs to be ridden like that. Ryan Moore takes over tomorrow, has been backed, but he should have a solid chance if Roaring Legend takes on Al Karim up top. Epic Poet should finish well, but tricky little contest.
Okay, I'm just looking through the odds for this one. This is on York on Saturday, just the updated odds for this one. And go through these now. This is the race to the Ebor. Remember, the Ebor meeting is at generally around the end of August.
I was actually at this. I was at this York. My Google memories came up. I was in York this day last year. If you haven't been, what a great spot to go racing.
Yeah, this is on Saturday. And this is the race of the Ebor Stakes. So I'm just bringing up the odds here. What do we got here?
This 3 o'clock,
York. So Al Karim.
He bombed behind
the one I liked was Epic Poet.
Yeah, same for me, yeah.
Yeah, 3-1. Ryan Moore in the saddle, third in the course and distance group two last month. Likes the course. Thought that was one for me. The sprint handicap as well is at 3:35 at York on Saturday. We have a William Haggis classic, William Haggis horse here in a favourite, Thunder Call, 5-1 shot. And he's a distance winner at Kempton last time, and he's only had 3 runs. So, like, typical improver.
Typical improver, yeah. I a couple of interesting runners here. Johnny Murchison's over Chicago Pope. Connor Beasley rides Beast Taka Win in Nace the last day, which would be a weaker race than this, and certainly was a weaker race at Chester that Ruby's Angel won the last day under Rushing Murphy. And funny enough, that day she's a horse who likes to make the running, but she was held up, and probably the one rule in Chester is not to do what Oisin Murphy did the last day, and she won. She came up very wide, lost a lot of ground, came up and won. She's been nudged up 5 pounds. I think at 16-1 she's quite interesting. For all that, this is a better race. She's only a 3-year-old on the up, and maybe they found riding her that way the last day, she's a bit better.
Which one is this again?
That is, what do we got? Ruby's Angel. William Pyle rides. Yeah. Say Oisin Murphy rode the last day. She's actually had a lot of jockeys. She's by Starman, who's a sire who's done very, very well.
Yeah.
Harry Davies, Safi Osborne, Oisin Murphy, Tom Marquand and William Pyle tomorrow. Definitely has a chance, even up in grade.
Money for Chicago Pope and Connor Beasley into 12s. And Red Spell's Danger had money for it when I was doing the card for this. Won nicely at Hamilton over the distance last time. Is progressive as well. Sandown on Saturday, good to soft, good in places. We've got the Scurry Stakes over 5 furlongs. This is a sprint 2:42. So I'm just looking through the odds here for this one on Saturday. And we have Words of Truth, Oisin Murphy in at 9-4, Military Code 5-2, money for Manatee Mamas into 11-2 and money for Lady Usmane. But it's kind of ranging between 7-1 and 17-2. Other ones are pretty friendless. I liked Lady Usmane here because she won her first two races, then ran creditably at Haydock in her last run. Coming back down a trip now, I think she's got each way claims, Lady Usmane.
Yeah, Henry de Bromhead won this race last year. I remember Colin Keane rode a horse who was very reliant on luck to get out and win. But it's 5 furlongs of Sandown is actually a hell of a spectacle. You'd think more.
Is it stiff?
I don't think it is, but it seems to be very fast. Like, I wouldn't have seen that many sprints there, but if you watched the race, this race last year, it's a really good watch. Colin Keane nailed us, Sandown, we think of the Tingle Creek, but here you have a sprint. But I actually think you mentioned Lady Umzane, it's very interesting. I'm going to take a chance on one here at a big price. Oh. And that is Palmera, who's basically probably going to be ridden to get Black Tie Pair. She's a filly by a top sire in Havana Grey, and she'll be ridden to come home. She's 33-1, and she's a really, really solid line of form. I could definitely see her finishing in the first three.
And she's a maiden after 12 runs.
Yeah, she's just like, she's highly tried. So they tried to get Eve Johnson Houghton. If you look at the race,
she's running
Group 2s, Group 3s, listed race novice. She's basically looking for Black Type, but there will be definitely a pace on here. Interesting that Oisin Murphy for Charlie Appleby, he's 4 from 11 this year. So you're weighing up Military Code, who's Billy Nutt Lansmount, against Words of Truth.
But it's the class horse of the race, Words of Truth. Like, he's a Group 2 winner at Newbury last year, but he hasn't run over 6 furlongs.
Yeah,
more since January.
I do wonder, if you're flat out over 6 furlongs as a 2-year-old, going to 5 furlongs on your first start as a 3-year-old, I'm always a bit wary of a horse whose last run was in Arabia as well. It's just like you kind of have to come back and readjust. I'm not surprised Military Code's been back, but really intriguing race.
Interesting selection there for you, Johnny. Palmera, very Brazilian.
Indeed.
They're going to peel in Palmeiras here with the World Cup upon us, Brazil, Morocco on Saturday. We have then on Cork Sunday, good to yielding ground for the Mallow Handicap at 237 and the Munster Oaks at 448. So good to see a bit of good prize money for this Mallow Handicap on Sunday.
And it's the only 7
furlongs.
It's the only straight 7 furlongs apart from Laytown in
right.
Ireland.
17 right? runners.
Wouldn't it be good to have a Premier Handicap in Laytown?
58 grand. Good.
It's a really.
Ah, Sir Les Patterson's going.
Sir Les Patterson's going, and
we
an
know,
old friend of
him.
Sir Les Patterson, Gleneagle Bay, is also running.
And so Go Atletico.
Stephen Thorne, yeah. So you'd know a lot of these characters, partly owned by lads you might see in Laytown later on in September. Gleneagle Bay is very interesting. He bombed a Cork the last day, and in fair enough, he's been disappointed. But he's actually down to 89 now.
Has he got the resolution on that final furlong?
I don't know if it's a resolution or like he has, but I prefer him to be losing short close finishes than not performed at all. And he has questions to answer, but
Colin Keane rides them.
I was going to go with him, but I'm going to go with Collecting Coin, who's the cheapest on the first time. When this horse ran, I think, was it in Limerick or Mallow? Might have been Limerick, actually. I remember talking to Kate Harrington beforehand. She was just saying, I'm just a bit afraid he's a Morning Glory, this horse. He does work very well. And I kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. He ran really well over 7 here the last day under Chris Hayes. He's a horse who won in Galway when he was well backed in a maiden. I think he was prominent that day. To me now, he looks like he needs to be delivered on the line. Ketan Kennedy claims 5, dropped a pound. Lots to like in a cracking handicap with 4 each way places. Maybe Hills might even pay 5, but at least 4 each way places.
Rami, well, we haven't got odds yet, and Sam Norris is off this week first, but we'll plough through with Johnny Rami, Johnny Mercer. I think remember him winning at Leopardstown last year. He's on top weight. And then this Munster Oaks for fillies and mares, 1.5 miles, 4.48 on Sunday. Looks like Nira is going to be there, the favourite for Joseph O'Brien, who's flying with Dylan Brown McMonagall again.
Yeah, near it was, if I recall, very well back behind Purview when, in fairness, she faced a hopeless task the last day behind Purview. Joseph also runs Bessette. Any horse starting off for Paddy Toomey would
there
be interesting.
There are odds from Hills, and the only bookmaker are Hills with a near 11-4, Sparanua 7-2, Bessette 5s, Perfecture Craft 5s, Bloom 13-2, 10-1 bar.
Well, I did have to laugh. I saw Jackie Bulger, Jim's wife in Dublin, actually, during the week, and I was messaging Jim. I wasn't 100% sure it was her, so I messaged Jim, is that Jackie? And he said, oh, it is. And then I was apt to message him again today. He sold Sparanua to Newton Anner. And anyone who's seen the Morris Regan's name will be known for the land in the spat with Coolmore and all of that. But I found this quite funny because I wouldn't say Jim Bulger and Coolmore are best buddies anymore. I think that's fair to say. And Jim has sold, well, Jackie has sold Sparrow Nua to their rival Morris Regan, and she looks like a horse that could bring him back to the big time. I thought she was brilliant at going the ground. The form is working out. She should stay a mile and a half. And I don't know what sort of money Jim got for her, but it plenty. And she's my selection. I still think she could be very good.
7-2. That's his Cork on Sunday that we were looking at there as well. Royal Ascot, are you a fan?
Oh, yeah. Jeez, yeah. I haven't been, but it's brilliant, really. Like, I still...
Would you do the top hat and
yeah,
all
well,
that
either,
stuff?
Yeah, you either do or you don't. Like, you either do or you don't go. You know, it's... it's supposed to be a great party. I think the weather's going to be pretty favourable. I just feel the racing is really good. Like, Cheltenham can kind of feel like that race is sort of thrown in there. Royal Ascot racing, and a deep international aspect to it this year with runners from
Australia,
even Japan. Like, so... I'm really looking forward to it.
Let's have a look at it then, kind of at the top level, because we don't know exactly with declarations. Things can change, folks. I mean, just put that caveat in if you're listening here on Friday as we record this. But good to firm ground is what they're saying. Tuesday, you got the Queen Anne Stakes, a Group 1 over a mile. The favourite is Notable Speech. Former Guineas winner was winner as well at the Breeders' Cup last year, but is disappointed twice at Royal Ascot, including in this race, went fourth last year, won by Docklands at the time.
Yeah, I think Notable Speech just might have fewer questions to answer now than maybe at this stage last year, and that performance in the lock-ins was brilliant. He was very well backed. Remember at the time Charlie Appleby was supposed to be completely out of form?
Yeah, we were talking about it, and I said if there was market movement, there was a market move.
It was sixes into twos or something. So yeah. Reports of his demise were certainly exaggerated. Zeus Olympios was third. He was probably a little bit unlucky, but you're kind of watching that back. Zeus Olympios prior to that was beaten by Opera Ballo, so has to reverse form of both of them, and I do kind of, you're looking at Newbury and you're thinking it's hard to see how he'll reverse the form. His Notable Speech was the winner the whole way. I don't think he's that bad of a price actually around about 7-4. I find it very hard to see how he's beaten in this if he produces his lock-in run, and like he's essentially a reliable horse, and Charlie Appleby's horse have been in good nick. Docklands obviously among the what a race is going to be if they all turn up.
More Thunder handicapper last year, the bit of money for him, second in the lock-in. Like you have even Cicero's Gift, who was a rank outsider that won last year later on in the season at Ascot, so he's 50-1. That's the Queen Anne Stakes, the Group 1 on Tuesday. I mean, they come thick and fast, the Group 1s. It really is a fine first day card, I have to say. I always say the Coventry is always interesting, the 6 furlong race for 2-year-olds, the 3:05.
But it's a Group 2 and it could be
yeah,
Group 1.
It could be Group 1. The other two races we'll get to are Group 1s on that day. But I was looking at the market split the last few days, and it was Confucius who was coming in and Great Barrier Reef who was going out in the market. So Confucius is now very strong for Aidan O'Brien, 15-8.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of need to have some insight information to know what's even running here. Like Confucius, son of No Name Ever, who won a, kind of wasn't necessarily a red hot maiden in days, but won it very well. I'm surprised JD had cut a dash's price. Now, I'm pretty sure this is his only potential entry.
16-1.
He's by Star Spangled Banner, who has had an incredible run of it with the Guineas horses. This horse, basically after York, I think Richard Hannon said, like, definitely wants 6 furlongs, but bolted up, beat a well-fancied favourite who hasn't run since. Sean Levy said this horse gave me a great feel. I honestly don't know why he's 16-1. It doesn't make sense given who trains him, how well-fancied he was in debut and the impression that he made. I wouldn't be absolutely buzzing about the O'Brien runners at the price.
Well, I was looking through when I was going through this. Confucius won a nice 6 furlong maiden. Great Barrier Reef has won a couple of current maidens on differing ground. Night in Vegas, 2 from 2, including over the course and distance. Ruler's Pride did well when winning over 5 furlongs in debut there. Superb won on debut over the distance at Yarmouth. A lot of guessing, to be honest, in this.
It's a great race, Coventry.
Royal Heritage won a Hamilton maiden over the distance. But I kind of agree with you that, look, you should be looking for a bit of value, and I think you've probably identified that with a cut of dash.
I'd probably be inclined to back him now, because I imagine he will run. They wanted to run him Royal Ascot after York. This is the only race he can run in, and you're not sure what else won't run.
Yes, yeah. King Charles, the third stakes. Group 1 over 5 furlongs. That's on Tuesday at Ascot. Royal Ascot, 3:40. Last year you had American Fair beating Frosted Dawn in the race, but when it coming to the betting, when I was looking at it last night for this one, they weren't at the top. Instead it was Overpass, who's an Australian raider, 5-2. I find it sometimes, remember Schwazier about 20 years ago, but it's hard sometimes to assess these Aussie types. Yeah. But the market is assessing him very strongly.
Yeah, and Star Spangled Banner is the son of Schwazier, actually, when you go back. And I remember Schwazier was running against Oasis Dream that year. And I think, was it Oasis Dream was going for the double on the Saturday, and Schwazier upset him. They were really good speedsters. And Overpass, I mean, I'm not going to say I know anything about Australian form, but the Aussie sprinters would be better, I'd imagine. Interesting punt. This is a race I'd prefer to watch, to be honest, JD. Yeah. Interesting to see how Aidan gets on with the horse. He's only a 3-year-old down at the bottom. Mission Central. Yeah. He's been very good in his last 200 days.
12-1. You get the top price in him. Mm. Raefka has top connections, like the Aga Khan won at Longchamp last time out. Knight Raider was 12th in this last year, which would temper my enthusiasm. Rosie Affair has been attracting market support, but has been running over 6.
It's funny as well to see Raefka, who's French trained. You do not associate France with sprinters. And
you don't.
Could be second favourite, son of Blue Point. Like, daughter of Blue Point, rather.
The St. James's Palace Stakes, probably you'd say, is the big one on the first day of Royal Ascot. And Bo Echo and his dad hopefully will reacquaint themselves, although there's been a bit of money for Puerto Rico into Tans. But Bo Echo is odds on. Is he a penalty kick? I mean, he's so impressive at Newmarket, and he's unbeaten. And he also has surely to come on from his first run, as his dad did at the Curragh.
That's it. Like, to train a horse, George Bowie would have, you know, he's had a couple of classic winners now, but he wouldn't have, he's a young trainer, and to have the confidence, and he had massive confidence to say this horse is going to be right without a run to win at Newmarket. I thought Gestad was good at the Curragh without necessarily suggesting, oh my God, he's improved markedly. You said, is he a penalty kick? I suppose we spoke about the day Barney Curley had the four horses and the most
obvious
obvious one just didn't win. And you're on about the horse who broke his neck at the first bend or the dog. These things can happen. So, but all in all, I mean, it's very, very hard to oppose Bo Echo. If 5-6, it's very, I'd much prefer to be a backer than Lair. He looked exceptional in the guineas. And I mean, we're talking about nearly 3 lengths that Gestad has to find. I don't really see why he should, especially if it's sort of that good to firm ground.
Yeah, we also looked down on Wednesday at Royal Ascot. The only Group 1 race of the day is the Prince of Wales Stakes. You have Darius, who won the Arc last year, 5-4. Ombudsman into the same price as some bookmakers, 5-4. But Ombudsman, of course, won the race 12 years ago, because he'd be a pretty old colt if he did that. You've got Al McCam, who won the Tattersalls Gold Cup at the Curragh, form franked by Bay City Roller. And Minnie Hawk surely can't run as badly as she did the last time.
No, I mean, and if you are to, generally I'm of a mind to forgive horse. Like, she could be quite a backable price.
Yeah,
she's 8-1. She doesn't have that much to find at all with Darius, like, a head on Longchamp running, and 1.2 miles. I'd love if she ran. I love seeing horses take on, you know, the mares who, like Minnie Hawk, most of the time she can kind of avoid the boys, but she showed last year in the Arc, not so much the Breeders' Cup, but she showed how good she can be. Kalpana is very good as well. Darius looked brilliant on his return. He was only 1-5, but he looked very, very good. He looks like he's as good as ever as a 4-year-old. I don't have a strong opinion on it. It's going to be a hell of a race now. I'd love to see if Ombudsman, Darius, and Minnie Hawk, if the three of them showed up, we'd be in a great place.
We will be. That's Wednesday at 4:20, the Prince of Wales Stakes. Then we'll look at it as well at Thursday, because we're back on next Friday. But with the Gold Cup on Thursday, 4:15, 2.5 miles. Scandinavia, the favourite, 11-8. With the bookies, won the St. Ledger last year at Doncaster and won the Goodwood Cup, is only 4. A relaxed type, could be another Kyprios. Must prove he gets the extra half mile, but the evidence suggests he might.
Yeah, it's a big question, JD. I remember talking to Paddy Toomey after Down Royal, and he was like, you know, we've already beaten Scandinavia, and he seemed to be, you know, confident that he could run well.
Carmers, 20-1.
So maybe if you're back in Scandinavia, have a saver on him. I mean, I didn't think he was at all impressive at Leopardstown the last day, but some part of me kind of liked that run where they're training for this race and then whatever else, and they probably left him a little bit undercooked, even though it was his second run. And Aidan O'Brien was alive with him afterwards. I'm not mad on backing kind of horses in the Gold Cup who, at short prices, who haven't proven that they stay.
Yeah,
but it's very, very hard to see him not staying. And he just has that lovely way of good stares. Like, he's a stare with speed, but he doesn't tend to win by very far either. Lovely, lovely horse by Justify.
Well, we know the Trotterman does stay, because he won the race last year impressively. Yet to be seen this year, but there is money for him into 5-1 top price now.
He was very good last year. I remember last year Illinois was sort of, he was thrown into the race as the Ballydoyle, the main hope. He's probably limited enough. I think this is a much better race, to be honest.
Rahib, if that's the way you pronounce it, strengthened over the winter, a worthy challenger following the second behind Scandinavia at Doncaster and won a Yorker reappearance.
Absolutely, only like neck behind Scandinavia. It's, I think you can be in the ledger, I think you can be kind of deceptive in terms of being a neck behind Scandinavia, but he was very good at York. Roger Varian's having a good run of it as well. It's going to be a cracking race, and I wonder what sort of pace angle there will be as well. I would suspect this, you know, I suspect Coolmore would like, Ballydoyle would like Trawlham and not to get sort of a soft lead anyway, but as it is now, they don't have anything else in the race, which is quite interesting.
Caballo de Mar.
Jan Brugel, sorry, could possibly make it, yeah.
Well, that would be, I wouldn't want to see that after.
I doubt he'll run now, but yeah, it'd be interesting if they're obviously hopeful that this race can be quite messy. Like, they're obviously hopeful that we don't need a pacemaker. It's a great race, this. Like, is it, you know, these horses, they have no real major commercial imperative, and people like the stairs. Like, they're just, you can relate to them more.
That's why Ryan Moore comes into his own these types of races, because he's just so good. Caballo de Mer, we know he does get the trip won a Group 1 a Longchamp, so he's got each way claims in the Gold Cup at Ascot. We're looking ahead to the Royal Meeting there. And have you any kind of theory or, you know, from your past punting about the sprints, like the draw, does it...
Oh, definitely, yeah. Like, these things are kind of after the fact. Like, you won't know. A lot of it depends on watering, and I imagine they might need to water if the weather's going to be good. So that like, I mean, that's just... Like, there are days when you're just like, why do I back horses? And Epsom last weekend was one of them. Was like, I've a maid asking me in the morning for like, is it a good idea to back Calandagan and Benvenuto Cellini? And I fancied both, but by the time the race came on, which generally wasn't in the forecast I saw, like, they had no chance. So, like, you're given two favourites, and basically then a few hours later, you said they've no chance on the ground. So stuff like that in the draw here, it can be tricky, like, but... And ultimately, you'll have to pay your money and take your chance.
Would you rather back two horses in a sprint or a horse each way? Two horses to win or a horse each way?
Probably two horses to win, because it depends on the each way terms. And the bookmakers give good each way terms now, but that for me is an underrated policy in terms of punting. Like, I backed a horse at Teclan Queeley's in Sligo the other day, had a good bet, and it looked the winner the whole way. And I had a saver on another horse, which didn't win. It was done by the joint favourite. So I had two bets. One was second, the other was nowhere.
Was this Josie?
What's that?
Josie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was basically a mug bet following Declan Queeley in a bad race in Sligo that nearly came off. But I do like that policy. At least have a saver on something. And if you have one horse who bombs, you have something else running for you.
Let me see if I can guess your charity bet this week. Is it going to be Sparrow Nua and the Munster Oaks?
No, I'm actually going to go collecting coin in the sprint at the price. I think he'll probably be about 8 or 10 to 1 each way. And maybe we'll see what the lads will offer us. But hopefully you'll see on the website on the day, it'll be 4 or 5 places. Sparrow Nua, I like the idea that Jim Bulger... I was going to see Paul Simon... 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I mean, the obvious question mark is, what's an 84-year-old in front of 14,000 people going to perform, like, whatever? But on the way, we stopped off for something to eat. I was eating a pizza and I was looking at Goran, and Sparrow Nua wins in the manner of a really good horse for 84-year-old Jim Bulger. So I was thinking, like, the boys are still going strong, and I think she could be very good.
Okay, so Johnny Ward's charity bet, we got 25 each way on collecting coin number 13 in the 2:37 at Cork on Sunday, trained by Jessica Harrington.
Who was at a really good, really good maiden winner at Leopardstown last night.
And Kathleen Kennedy to ride £5 claimer, number 13 in the 2:37 on Sunday, the Cork, the 7-furlong Mallow Handicap, Johnny's each way bet, 25 each way, collecting coin. Keep an eye on that, folks, on the Racing Pod this week. Johnny, thanks so much.
Thanks,
we'll speak to you soon. Take care. Folks, remember, the Racing Pod is free wherever you get your podcasts.
The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with William Hill. Who you got? 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.